Hey, everybody, it's the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from a windowed bunker, maybe? Somewhere deep in the arm, in the left armpit of the DPRNY. And
Worms.
Yeah, what's up, everybody? It's Jeremy. I got Daryl with me today. What's up, Daryl? Been a long time.
Hey, Jeremy. It's been way too long. It's great to be back on the show with you.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. You joined the Fiends. You know, we got to do a show or two together, and then you got shifted off to Monday nights. I was on my Sunday nights. We we never got to talk anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I was Michael kept me all to himself for like months on end, all through this whole winter, and they just recently released me into the wild. So yeah, I just landed over here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, so. I mean, so far I'm digging this new setup where we don't have to be up late at night. Although I think I mentioned on the last one I recorded, my sleep schedule has been so off since we stopped. I'm so used to being on Fiend time most of the time because I was doing three shows a week at one point, and my body just doesn't want to adjust because I can fall asleep at like midnight 1 a.m. but then at 6 a.m. my body's like, hey, it's time to get up. You usually only get like 5 hours of sleep after doing a show, right? Come on, let's go.
Yeah, and I'm like the odd fiend out because, see, for me, those shows, they were like starting at the latest 8 p.m. and then finishing up at 10 p.m. And I was kind of like, okay, because, normally it is work. It's work to do a Fiends show. It's work to be like, I'm going to be on it. I'm not going to say those naughty words. I'm going to be responsive and yet not talk over Michael or, it's all of these parameters that are extremely loose, right? You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, at the end of all that, so try doing that when you're super tired. So I'm just like, for all of you guys who did Fiends shows between 1 and 3 a.m., I'm just super impressed. And then what'd you do? Like, then type up notes afterwards and do a little bit of editing and send it off?
Well, me, yeah. I did that. Well, let's see. I was on the radio for a little over 2 years before we jumped ship to the podcasting thing finally, but... So yeah, I did 2 years of that, and I was editing for I think at least a year and a half of that. Michael showed me how to do that pretty early on. So, although luckily, usually I would try to remember to write notes during the show, because that's the one tricky thing I had to learn was that when I do my other shows like the Seeds of Liberty or Abolitionist Abstractions or any of this other stuff, we record and I'll try to scribble down notes as we're talking just so I, remember certain points to go back at. But I edit the entire show and listen to the entire thing again before I put it back out. So note taking wasn't as big of a deal because it was like, oh, if I miss something, I'll just catch it when I listen to it back again. Because I was also always listening to try to pull out like a promo clip or like, a bumper clip, like some 10 to 30 second thing that was funny from the show and just try to grab that too. So I never had to worry about that. And then we started doing the Fiends. I'm like, oh, I got this covered. And the first couple of shows I did, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I don't actually listen to the whole show when I do the edit now. I really have to remember what we talked about. And there's so many shows that we'd go into a break, like maybe the first or second break, and I'd have to go to whoever I was doing the show with. What did we just talk about? Like, I've forgotten already. Like, it's already gone. Because of all the things you mentioned, trying to keep all that other stuff in your head. Like, yeah, we're on the air. We got to do all these things, but.
Yeah, and that's why I have a pen and paper in front of me too, because this is it's ridiculous to try to do everything and pretend like you have to reinvent the wheel as if you have to, you're part of some Greek oral history heritage where you just recite, some of those guys, what's that guy, Homer. You're just reciting Homer. You never like had to read the whole thing. You just know everything line by line. That's ridiculous. We're in the 21st century. Use tools.
Seriously,
that's my little complaint,
man.
For the moment. Use the tools. Don't reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And using them is a good piece of advice because I actually have that tool. I have a notebook in front of me that I have for every show. I just have to remember to actually use it because it sits there. But sometimes I get to talking and I forget about it. And then 20 minutes later, I'm like, oh, geez, I probably should have written some of that down so I don't have to go back and listen to it.
Oh, and for the Fiends listeners, by the way, if you're listening along and you're thinking, wow, they really like the notes for those shows that Daryl was on, that's pretty much exactly following the topics going on. Well, that might be, but like I generally, when I do a show with Michael, I've got a full page or more of notes, and only some of that actually ever gets into, the description of the show or even talked about. Sometimes I'm just writing stuff down that I never even get to say out loud to him. because, you know, it's going to happen.
Well, see, that's a lesson I always try to impart. Once I became, established here with the Fiends, I tried to pass that knowledge on to all the new Fiends that came in after me. And I always, I don't remember if I got to give you that warning or not, but I usually tell everybody when you do a show with Michael, bring notes, but be prepared to never talk about any of them. But bring him, because if you don't bring him, he's going to think you're not trying. But just be prepared. You're most likely not going to get to talk about any of the things you want to talk about unless he's already let you know that he's super excited about one of the topics you brought to him. And then even then, if something you say reminds him of a story of his Cash Newman days or, something back in upstate New York, then all bets are off.
Yeah. If it breeds, it leads, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So. But, those are always, I always enjoy those shows anyway. I mean, you and I came here to do this one today, and we actually had a plan in mind where we haven't gotten anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't even gotten anywhere near that already. But I enjoy these shows. I've always enjoyed those shows more anyway, where you just kind of fly by the seat of your pants and just take it. Because usually if you're doing that, that means you're having fun. And you're engaged in the conversation because you don't need to look for notes. I've always felt that, when you have to keep going to story after story after story, then, unless you're an actual news show, unless that's your function, then to me it just seems like you're like reaching for content, like you can't converse with the person you're doing the show with, that you guys are just you need a buffer between the two of you or something. And not always the case. Some people just are more comfortable doing stuff like that, but for me, that's the way I always looked at it. So that's why some of my favorite shows over the years have always been, the ones with Diana and I are always some of my favorites, because we almost never have, I don't think we've brought notes to even half the shows we've done together, and we just would have a 2-hour conversation because that's just what we do.
That is a powerful duo, you guys. And now you can do it anytime. I guess say times in the daytime. It's it's 7. It's 11:07 a.m. here, Big Island, Hawaii. It's not like we're stuck to reading the time out loud. And now this trip to the market.
Yeah. Well, if Diana, if you do actually listen to this show, you need to get back to me, because it's funny you mentioned that. She actually did. She messaged me like 2 weeks ago and was like, I want to record with you. And I was like, all right, great. Just let me know when. I'm like, I'm free. I try to leave myself free, most evenings and on the weekends. Like, we're recording this one now because I know not everybody has the luxury of my schedule. So I try to leave myself available, open, at least 6 days a week. I give some time. I'm like, here, this way you guys can figure out what works for you and get back to me. And then she never got back to me. I'm like, wait a minute. What happened to our recording? I thought we were all, she even said she wanted to do, she was talking about doing a double recording possibly, like one for the Fiends and one for my Abolitionist Abstraction show. And get on the ball, Diana.
I know what that's like. Being responsive and juggling lots of eggs or something like that. but I'm going to, I usually have to presume disorganization rather than malevolence. I'm going to presume on other people's part, if they're going to be slow to respond to me, it's something organizational. It's something catastrophic, sheer number of things, a bunch of which are the money things. I don't know. I'm presuming.
Sure.
The things that are paying jobs. Fiends. Oh, yeah. Freedom Fiends listeners, this is not a paying job. Imagine that. So, however, it is shameless self-promotion sometimes if we want it.
Absolutely. So, that's what.
Yeah. So here's a question. How has changing this Fiend schedule affected your parenting, to make a nice ham-fisted segue?
Well, slightly ham-fisted. I don't know if you're anywhere in the territory of my buddy Dave yet. Not that ham-fisted, but it's actually it's given me more time with my kids, I guess. Although these days it's kind of tough because with everything going on with me, with trying to sell the house and still dealing with the court stuff and running around and now having to take care of all the stupid BS stuff that the government puts in my way just in order to sell my own house. I have more time than I would have, but I still don't end up seeing them because they end up having to be out of the house for a certain, they've stayed out of the house a couple of nights because things have been going on here early in the morning that it would just be easier if they weren't here. But overall, I don't think it's I don't think it's affected it that much. Because, but
that's good.
Like I said, it's because everything's in turmoil right now. Once we get move out of here and get resituated, I'll have a better idea of how much it's affected. I mean, I'm pretty sure it'll have a great impact because the plan once we move was Jen was going to go back to work and I was finally going to get to stay home and play stay-at-home dad. And that means I need to be functional on Monday and Wednesday mornings. Where I usually got to sleep in till 10 a.m. because I didn't go to bed until 4 after doing the show. So I'm pretty sure that'll have a profound effect. I'll probably need at least one less cup of coffee a day.
Man, that's like, look at it. You're getting all healthy, you know, yeah, you're getting all ready for perfect parenting. And, you know, wait. Your parenting is a different level than my parenting. So that's, you know, we're both parents here.
Yes.
Yours, you have twins, and they're what age?
They are 6.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, 6 now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, just to the age where it's like getting easy. That's nice.
Oh, yeah, it's so easy. Well, no, it is. In some regards, yes, because they're a lot more. They have a lot more autonomy now, and they do. They are able to perform certain functions on their own that they weren't able to do just a year ago. You know,
bathroom stuff.
Yeah, well, bathroom stuff, getting stuff out of the fridge on their own. You know, getting their own food. They've become a lot more adept at those things, which is great. It definitely takes the time off, but. On the flip side of it, now they're getting older, they're even more curious, and they're asking a heck of a lot more questions. So it's a trade-off, you know. It's one type of work for another. I don't care. It's still doing the parenting thing. Although I will say, because I know she will listen to this at some point, yes, Jen does do more of the work than I do. I will give her I will give credit where credit is due. Although that will change, hopefully. Like I said, that's the plan. I'm going to immerse
myself. For now.
Yeah, I'm going to immerse myself into this in a couple of months, hopefully, once we get relocated.
But, wow.
Yeah, so it's a little different having twins and dealing with them right in the here and now versus you. Your daughter's a little older.
A little. She's 22. Yeah. So
just a wee bit of a difference. And,
yeah, the bi-weekly Skype call or, like, you know, video chatting kind of thing. And she's doing a semester over in South Korea. So it's a completely different parenting paradigm. A lot of my whole thinking and really, like, you know, philosophizing around parenting and then putting whatever I can into practice, it really happened after... No, I guess a bunch of it did happen right before she was born. The Continuum concept, I went through that book and similar resources. But, you know, the internet was young back in 1996 when my daughter was born. It was very young, you know. And my ability to access information, it was just like starting. It was really growing, that kind of thing. But I knew something was really messed up. I was really scared. I was 23 and a half or so when I found out I was going to be a dad, Jeremy.
I can't even.
So it was really quite a thing.
I was going to say, I can't even imagine that, but actually I can kind of. I think, yeah. I've talked about this publicly before. And if I know I've talked about it publicly. I don't know if I talked about it on some of the Fiends, but when I was much younger and much, much dumber, I was involved with somebody. And around that age, she did end up pregnant, but she decided she didn't want to keep it. And I was like, okay, great. I'm all with you on that one. So
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store. Or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com. Mm.
I dodged having to deal with it at that age, but so I was going to say, I can kind of imagine what it was like to be dealing with that kind of, oh my God, I'm going to be a father at 23.
Yeah, it was. And I knew things were wrong, but I didn't really have the perspective. I didn't really have the, like, exactly what would be needed. All I knew was just one thing, Jeremy. I knew that it would really, really help if I could demonstrate to my daughter that life made sense, that my life made sense, so I could give her at least a format that she could emulate or consider for her life to make sense. But my life didn't make sense. I knew that very clearly, so I was very much doing the fake it till you make it kind of thing. Now I know exactly what I was missing. I had some things. I wrote down four things that I needed to be a good parent, and I had two of them. So.
And what were those four things?
Okay, the first is money. I had money.
Okay, well, that's a good start.
Yeah, isn't it, though? It's amazing how much money that really would help to make parenting that much easier. It takes a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I was really fortunate that at that time in my life, I had it, actually. I had enough money for the whole parenting, and not just like paternity leave, but maternity leave. Like, we didn't have to go to work.
Wow.
But
that's doing really well in that regard.
Right. You know, I would probably, if I had spent that time making money instead of spending it all, I probably might still have some money.
But, well, yeah, you know, there is that.
Possibly. I've had some bad choices over these 22 plus years. So, you know, so that was one thing. Yeah, the second thing was time. I had the time. See, the money made the time. And the time, you know, like, the time was all there. I had lots and lots of time to spend with my daughter. So at least I could show her that part, you know. But there was the three and four. I really just didn't have all of the intellectual skills that I really wanted to spend lots of that time with her. You know, and I mean, like, you know, what you're experiencing maybe now more and more over the time is just that, like, that type of guidance and demonstrating a life that makes sense, which is really like proof and concept. You know, I was missing that. I was missing a direction in my life up until I was 26. So she was already like a little toddler, and I was just starting to find out, oh my God, I can. Oh, yeah. A little buffer going on there. I was like, oh, my God, I can actually perform healthcare. I can go into the field of healthcare. That's what I didn't learn that until 26. Mm. So there was these years in between where I just was literally floating on that. I have the money. I have the time, but I have no idea what my direction and my goals and purpose are. And then I certainly very much was missing that fourth one, man. Can you guess what a fourth skill would be? I mean, a hard one.
Yeah.
If it's intellectual, what's the flip side?
Emotional?
Yeah. I was missing emotional skills, Jeremy, like in like a big way. I was losing my cool over all kinds of things. Not exactly a skill to demonstrate to a child. If anything, I was demonstrating to her what not to do.
Yeah.
And she was taking in that lesson, you know. But yeah, I mean, those are four things that are just majorly missing. And so I would say I want to just complain right away to all the parenting going on around us, because we're parents, so we can complain about parenting, right?
I think that's how it works. That's what they tell us, at least, right? You have to be involved to be able to have an opinion. That's
right. Okay. So I think most parents suck because they have missed all four of these. they don't have the money, the actual money to really be with that child. They don't have the money and they don't have the time. And if they don't have the time, that means they don't have the money. It's just like one of those two or both usually are missing. They just don't have it. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of messed up. But here's the deal. I mean, I still run into too many parents that I see who they don't want to be with their child because of their own emotional and intellectual issues. Like as the child gets older, they can't handle the intellectual components or the emotional parts when the child is younger. And that's where they, like, a child is not, you know, toddler, you know this, you saw that with the twins. They're not like set with the most perfect, like, emotional skill set of handling tragedy, which could be Cheerios when you wanted a cupcake, you know, basically is a tragedy as a child, you know?
The 6th Annual Midwest Peace of Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Benat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike, Papa, Lima, Fest. .org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
If you don't have the emotional skills, so that's my thing, basically. If you don't have the intellectual, emotional, money, and time skills, what do people do? you outsource, right?
Yeah. You find other people to handle the problem.
Well, yeah, I take them to this school place where, since you already pretend, you know, you pretty much, I think too many parents, they convince themselves that they don't know how to take care of their own children. That it takes a specialized learning to become a teacher of a child, you know? And they had no idea that it actually takes an average 200 hours to teach the average person reading and writing, like the average child, 200 hours. Like, yeah, that would be a metric missing on most people. Okay, so then if your child is extra slow, it's 400 hours. You know? You know? So 15,000 hours is your standard curriculum hours of in a desk in a, I would say, government school, which what I think listeners are calling public schools.
Yeah.
So that's my complaint, Jeremy, is that that's a whole lot of not really thinking. That's like, I want a house, but I have not in any way researched, you know, everything having to do with houses. You know, I just know I want a house and you just go get one. You didn't have the money to pay for it or the time to really even spend and live in it, because now you're mostly spending your time out of the house working to continue to pretend that you own the house. You don't really. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah,
it's that kind of parenting. Did I push any buttons for anyone listening? Because I kind of hope so. You know, I mean, that's the point, in my opinion.
Yeah. Not necessarily push buttons, but I mean, definitely a couple of those things struck a chord with me, because I was like that even up until I became a parent. And in a lot of those respects, unfortunately, you know, when my kids were born, I did have a decent amount of money, luckily, because I had my business up and running for, I guess, 6 years at that point, maybe. And, you know, things were going along really well. I already had the house and everything. And I didn't have much time, but that became a choice after they were born. And I told Jen that, you know, we decided that she just wouldn't go back to work and she would stay home with the kids, which meant I needed to work more in order to bring in the money that we needed. But I had a somewhat direction. You know, you're talking about the four components that you were mentioning. The third one, like, I had a direction at the time. I just, I have this business. You know, I recognize that I fell into it, but this is what I've been doing and this is what I plan on doing for a while. So, like, yeah, that's kind of covered. I can kind of, like, you know, be stable enough in that regard to teach them things coming from that. But the emotional aspect, oh no. I mean, I probably still don't even have that. I still don't have that under control. I've always been a very emotional individual. But that part's been a learning process for me, and I've been learning on the job. But I do recognize that a lot of people don't have any of the things, like you're saying, they don't have any of them. And, you know, sure, plenty of people fall into it, I guess. You know, oops, we're about to have a baby. This wasn't planned. Oh no, how did this happen? Well, if you really need the answer to that question, then we need to go back a long time, Sonny. I understand that those things happen. But yeah, most people aren't prepared. And, you know, in one regard, I guess, to be fair, I would say nobody's ever truly prepared to be a parent, because at least from my perspective, I had no idea what was coming. Like, I, you know, no matter how much I read, no matter who I talked to, no matter what previous experiences I had had, because while I was growing up, my mom, who was a teacher, for her entire career, actually stopped teaching at the government schools for a little while to set up her own little pre-kindergarten and nursery in our house. And I ended up working out of there part time. So, like, I had experience with younger kids and all this stuff. And, like, but still, like, nothing prepares you for it.
It's because it's 24/7. And even working in a daycare, you get to go home.
Exactly.
Know? You're not working alone usually. You're really not in a daycare. You're really not working alone usually. You know, I mean, usually there's like several people. And that's sometimes is the obstacle, is that usually parenting is done with two people. And how easy is it for two people to burn out at the same time?
Oh, very.
Like, it's extremely easy. You know, there's very few businesses that run 24/7 with two people. You know, like, I can't even think of one. You know, I mean, maybe some two, like, back-to-back neurotic cryptocurrency day traders who just never stop and are always, like, one of them is always awake and making the trades or something. I mean, this is theoretical. I really honestly don't know of anyone that fits that bill, you know? So it's, but in yet parenting, this would be the common thing, right? You and your woman there were just like both needing to both be on in each of these capacities with money. Certainly. Yeah. Someone's doing that. And then time. Well, someone's got the time to be around the little ones, because there's certainly that period of time where they're too little to, you know, leave with people unless they're like really close relatives, right?
Yeah.
I guess. And then there's just all the emotional skills of getting everything organized and making things make sense in one's own personal life, in the relationship, and then, you know, like at the stages to demonstrate to the children, you know, like there are literally so many things to demonstrate and teach, like to every little stage of the child. And then just the same thing with emotional things to teach. And like, yeah, I saw this was a big deficiency. I moved to Hawaii, Jeremy, and then I realized how deficient these things were. And that's where, you know, listening to podcasts and starting to up my game on this stuff. But I'm not going to do a lecture today on how to do all that. I'm just here to complain and hopefully push some sore spots on people's thoughts on their own parenting. Because, you know, if I can inspire self-punishment going on in your head, listener out there, about how you parented your child, good. You know, ram it in there is what I'm going to say. Like, make a few holes in there. And, yeah, ream it out a bit and then hopefully learn from this experience, because 20/20 hindsight helps. If you could just say you were an a-hole before it to your child, so good. Learn from that. Stop being that. Offer restitution. There's some of your options. I can think of more options, you know.
Sure.
If you did a bad job, just starts with honesty. Honestly assess it, you know. But, you know, maybe there's a lot of denial going on. Do you find that with parents?
Oh, sure.
They would rather just pretend that this was not a problem, that it really is not their fault, that they don't have the skills to...
Yes, I could take, well, because as you were saying that, I was thinking of my own experiences with like my parents, for example. And, you know, currently my mother and I don't speak, and I don't think we've actually spoken at all. And it's coming close on a year now, because I think the last time we actually spoke was shortly after my whole incident last year. And but when I had tried to raise topics like this with her, once I became a parent, and once I started learning about these things, because for me, like I said, I was ill prepared in a number of ways, but luckily for my children, the way I look at it, luckily for them, when they were only about a year old is when I really started stumbling into the whole anarchy thing. And I came across the ideas of peaceful parenting and all this other stuff. And I was like, right away, I was very intrigued, because even though I couldn't exactly put maybe the right words to it, I guess, I knew that I had an issue with the way my parents raised me. And wait, I didn't want to do that. Yeah. I didn't want to do the same things.
So, what were the issues?
Well, there was just like, you know, there was a weird set of rules. Like, you know, most of the time growing up, my dad was in charge and he was slightly authoritarian, not as much as my grandfather, his dad, who was a lot more authoritarian with them when they were growing up. But there was definitely some traces of that. And my mom like deferred to him most of the time. But if she didn't defer to him, then there was like just wildly different sets of rules between both of them, even when they were still together and living in the same house. And then it just became even worse once they divorced, where the structure was either forced to the point that it just automatically caused me to revolt against it, and so there was always a constant struggle there, or there wasn't enough that I was just out running amok and doing whatever I wanted to do, which also wasn't good in the long run either. So there was, you know, there were some other things too, but it was just like a lot of, like, that would go through my head and I'm like, well, I don't want to do that type of stuff. And when I found these new ideas, I was, like I said, I was very intrigued by them. So I got into a lot of that. So I was like, okay, well, I could do this, and this would probably end up better. So that's kind of the route I took. And then later on, after I got a better understanding of it and tried to start putting these things into practice with my kids, I went back to both my parents separately, you know, and my mom didn't really want to hear much about it, you know, because she was, you know, she's been a public school educator, or, you know, like I said, she ran her own thing for 6 or 7 years in the middle of that. But she started teaching I think she was like 25, 26, and she taught all the way up until she was like 65. So, you know, pretty much 40 years in the teaching field. And between that and also raising myself and my two sisters for the good portion of it by herself after my dad and her split, that and she also has that mentality of, you know, that gets beaten into a lot of people. Oh, single mothers, they're such heroes for doing these things, which I do take issue with at this point. I used to not do, but I think some people get away with that a little too much because, you know, just look at the results of how a lot of these kids turn out. It's not exactly the greatest. But again, that goes back to what you were mentioning earlier about it really does take, you know, even two people trying to work 24/7 doesn't really work out. So imagine trying to cut that down to one. You know, there's going to be things that are missed. It's not a knock on people. It's just it's the reality of the capability of the human body and the human mind. It can only handle so much, you know, that's just reality.
Yeah, if you look at history or, you know, any anthropology, the only single parents, you know, that exist out there in across history are refugees. You know, the only single parents that, you know, across like a much of like the millennia of human history, like, you know, parents are just going to be part of a tribe where like there are other parents who also have children, and they're kind of like living in proximity has been like the multi-millennial history as far as I think anthropological yes. evidence shows. Yeah. So I'm kind of making a claim based on like this research that could be like absolutely wrong, but I'm going to bet on it for now as being right. Because I'm agnostic, you know, but
I'm with you on that. But if one,
you dropped a term before, and I'm going to pull back to this one: peaceful parenting. You know, we're on radio stations where peaceful parenting might be a term that they might have heard, but they really don't know how to unpack it. Could you unpack it, maybe?
Good point. I did bury the lead a little bit on that one. To me, the basis of like the you know, the bare nuts and bolts of peaceful parenting is really just trying to raise your child without like without the coercion that you're looking to live without, you know, from without the state, that, you know, people like us try to not want to do that. So it involves not using physical violence as a discipline, you know, which some people euphemistically call spanking. But, you know, if you take away the flowery language, what is it? You're hitting a child. That's the reality. You know, you were talking about before, rubbing some people the wrong way. Well, I know that'll rub people some wrong the way, because that was going back to what I was talking about my mom and my dad, which I didn't get to yet. But we'll get back to that in a second. But basically raising them without turning to that, trying to reason with them and explain things to them, you know, not yelling at them and stuff like that, and raising them in a much more peaceful, you know, as voluntary environment as you can make it, because obviously children are not capable of making certain decisions for themselves because they just don't have the knowledge yet. But basically, you know, raising them in the most peaceful way possible, I guess, is how I look at the whole peaceful parenting thing. I don't know if you have more you want to add to that.
I think you mostly covered that there is an attempt to relate with one's children in a way that is pretty close to the way you would interact with anyone that you want to stay friends with, you know, like basically, which means that instead of making an appeal to an authority, you don't do this in my house, you know, you'd instead demonstrate and, you know, because little children need demonstrations, and also explain consequences. And I mean natural consequences, not artificial. So now I have to unpack it for people who don't understand what a natural consequence is. A natural consequence, when I put a lot of cream in my coffee and eat a lot of dairy during rainy, cold weather over here, a natural consequence is in my throat and like that, is a natural consequence that was explainable to my daughter back in the day when she was little. I'd be like, here, these are choices. You can put these things in your body. I ask you to go ahead and pay attention because there's going to be a cause and effect right away, maybe. And then hours later, at the end of the night, the next day, even the next several days, this is how far consequences go with food. And that's just the way it's built. And I didn't invent this way. So it's basically explaining and demonstrating. And that's a huge difference from, say, the appeal to authority, which is just saying, because I said so. Or, you know, all these other fallacies, like the appeal to violence. That's argumentum ad baculum, if you want to go all Latin about it. But, you know, you see, it's just it's an attempt to be rational about things, which is, and diplomatic too, which is, you know, diplomatic does not include threats, does not include making arbitrary claims that are not in any way backed up by evidence or, you know, that can't be demonstrated with a practical application. This is, that's a lot of words just to say, you know, don't be an a-hole, basically. Don't do that, you know. Don't do all those things that people would, like, that you personally would not want to receive. And I think that when you're mentioning parenting and, like, that children, they have a limited amount of what they can really do to protect themselves, that's, I look at it like a stewardship model. You know, like a kingdom and a steward. Do you know, like, examples like that?
Sure.
You know, if you read The Return of the King, Tolkien, for example, there's this steward who's holding the kingdom. He's waiting for the return of the king. They didn't give up on the king. They're holding the kingdom. And the way I was thinking of my parenting when my little one was small, you know, all the way up until even the present day, is just holding the kingdom of, like, trying to protect her from bad consequences just in case. You know, kind of like as the bigger she gets, allowing more and more decisions so that there's some actual consequence learning going on, not protected from learning by consequence, but protected from drastic consequence, you know. And that's just like a call, because it's this tough call that all of us parents make, where we're saying, I'm gonna pull you out of this situation now, because I've made that call. And it might, later on, you could be like rational about it and say, okay, maybe you could have handled that specific danger. Maybe you could have, you know, done that jump with your BMX bike, but, or your big wheel or whatever it is, you know?
Well, yeah.
maybe you don't need, like, to wear a helmet on top of your helmet, you know? So,
well,
oh,
go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, that was it. You know, okay. Just consequences.
Well, yeah, yeah, very big thing. And most people, well, two things on what you were just saying with the consequences part. Yeah, there's far too many people, especially the last couple of generations, more specifically of, like, the helicopter parents, that don't want their children to learn consequences, any natural consequences. They do their best to avoid every possible natural consequence their child, you know, like the people that literally, well, you know, you think would literally bubble wrap their children if it was socially acceptable. You know, like, these are the type of people you think would do that, because they really think they can, that's their job, is to protect them from everything. And it's like, well, no, that, because that doesn't set them up for the real world. Because there are consequences to your actions. That's just the way that's how the world works. That's how human nature works. That's how the laws of physics work. You know, like, there's consequences to your actions. And, you know, you try to protect them, and, you know, there's a line between trying to protect them from, like, what you were talking about, these extreme situations that may, even if it's you making a judgment call, maybe even based on your own personal experiences, like, yeah, I remember when I tried to do that at that age, didn't go well. I'm making a call in the moment, you know, because, and we can talk about it later. And even, like you said, as long as you're able to look at it, you know, later that day, the next week, a month from that, whatever, if you're able to talk about it with your children and be like, okay, listen, you know, maybe you could have, dad might have screwed up in that sense, I'm sorry. That goes a long way too. That's another thing, you know, we started to mention before about parents want to be in denial and not want to admit they made mistakes, even if it's later on, even if you figured it out, like, when your kids are grown. It's like, well, no, you know, I started to get to that before, because with my mom, like, when I said, when I brought these ideas to her, she just shrugged them all off. She didn't want to hear them. Because she would have to examine what she did, and she just never wanted to, which was interesting to me. Because my dad, on the flip side, the one who had been the authoritarian, and was actually the reason that inadvertently the reason I became an anarchist, because I went off on I've talked about this on the show before, where I went, that's how I got my start. My dad was a hardcore Tea Party guy, constitutionalist, who was all anti-Obama, Obama's a Muslim, blah, 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 and used to send me all these emails. And after a year of ignoring him, I finally set out to prove him wrong, because at that point, I was still a pretty hardcore leftist, largely, except I had a neocon. I was a progressive neocon essentially, because I had a Warhawk streak in me. I was one of those turn the Middle East to glass, because I lost my cousin. I lost my cousin in 9/11. He worked at Cantor Fitzgerald, which was on the top floors of both Tower One and Tower Two, and so I was kind of mad, and I had that streak in me. But I went out to prove him wrong, and then found out that he was right about certain things, but he was still wrong about others. And I just kept going past him. But it's interesting because, like I said, my mom was the more compassionate one growing up, but she didn't want to hear that she had been wrong about anything. My dad, on the other hand, was willing to listen to all these things and actually talk about them with me and admit mistakes he had made. And we actually now have an excellent relationship. Like, we spent years not talking. And now he's probably one of the only members of my family, if not the only one, that I turn to when I have issues these days. I don't talk to pretty much anybody else because of everything that's gone down over the years. And because my dad was willing to do exactly what I was just talking about, take the information in and go, maybe I could have done this differently. Maybe this was my fault. You know, this part was my fault type of thing. You know, just because he was willing to acknowledge that, I was able to forgive him for a lot more than I'm able to forgive my mom for.
So, cool. Your dad demonstrates two of the four qualities that I just wrote down. See, like, I'm making this whole thing into a seminar for better parenting. You know, so, those two are humility. Your dad was able to actually acknowledge mistakes and improvements or areas where things could be improved. He's able to acknowledge history. You know, there's humility. Such a difference between humility and humiliation. Humility. Yeah. It's like I build my self-esteem on finding out what is right. And then, you know, there's hubris. I build my self-esteem on making sure that I consistently think that I'm right. You know, and that's very different, you know. And then, of course, your dad was actually curious. He was curious as to your perspective, that he wanted to listen to you. Tell me more, Jeremy, my son, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that's something right there. And I think just like you, Jeremy, I might like choose my non-paid relationships, my people that I spend time, unpaid time with, my friends. I choose them based on these four qualities. And humility and curiosity are two of them. The other one there's just to make it quick, flexibility.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
I'm looking for a flexible approach, not like a firm, I believe that the government schooling system did myself and my children really well, and I'm glad that I have my certifications and my permission slips. And that's not flexible. That's actually rigid. And then, of course, consistency, the number one voluntarist, liberty-minded perspective quality, is just an aim to be more and more consistent and less hypocritical, you know? And you got all four of those, and you keep assessing them all the time, I'm pretty sure you'll be a great parent. And if you find yourself avoiding any of them, such as, say, avoiding any critique from your children, because they're going to get older and give you some of that, I hope, unless, of course, you are perfect.
Mine already have. Mine,
good.
Mine are both quite sassy and have no problem telling me when they think daddy is wrong.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Cause that's like a head check, you know, basically.
Well, yeah, but that, so. I like to think that with them, it does come, and it does, like, unfortunately unfortunately, I don't really care about it, but it does put some people off, because I've always spoken to them, you know, going back to something else we talked about earlier about, the peaceful parenting thing, like how you deal with them, like how you would deal with anybody else, essentially, or how you want to be treated by anybody else. I've also spoken to them as I would speak with pretty much anybody else their entire lives. So their vocabulary is pretty expansive for kids their age. But they also know all the naughty words, like, you know, the ones we can't say here. they do all know those ones. And they also know when to use them. They know context, which makes me laugh every time. But, other people get kind of turned off by that. But I'm like, what? It's not like they used it wrong. You know?
I think my ask is just to like record some examples of that and then sample it for an awesome hip hop song that you got coming up. You know?
Yeah, I'll talk to Nima about that. I'll see if he could use anything. But yeah, but no, but that's because of that. Like they've learned already how to try to keep me in check, like we were talking about, because they understand. You know, obviously they're still young. There's still plenty they don't understand yet. But they, you know, there's plenty I don't understand yet. I'm 41. But they at least have the understanding of certain how to communicate certain ideas back and forth to me in a language that I will understand, and they know, and because the other things I've tried to teach them, because I've tried to have them understand the ideas of self-ownership and property rights. Even without using like self-ownership, that I've used that term with them, but property rights, I don't think I've really used it, but I've tried to use examples like you were talking about before and be able to show them and be able to, you know, see this is how this works and yada, yada, yada. Because I've been able to do all that, they've been able to pick up on these things and they can call me on it if I'm doing something that would actually violate any of that.
Right.
You know, like I've gone over the line with my one daughter, she's like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm supposed to be able to do whatever what I want to do as long as I'm not hurting anybody. And I'm like, I want to yell. And I'm like, wait a minute. She's right.
No,
okay. But wait a minute. You're about to throw something. That now you've crossed the line. That's why we're at this event. You know, like but I have to think on my feet constantly because she can do that and has been able to for a couple of years now, which is, you know, makes it interesting and does make it frustrating. But it's actually getting the result that I said at the beginning I wanted, so I can't complain. You know, I've heard, it just made me think of something other really quick, and I'll let you speak again, because I heard you wanted to cut in. But I was reminded of this recently. Somebody was telling me that they heard another mother and their child interacting when they were out at like the park or the supermarket. I can't remember where it was, but the kid said "shut up" to the mom, and the mom, the mom actually told the kid to shut up first, and the kid said it back, and the mom freaked and lost it. It's like, you don't say that to me, but it's like, and the person who told me was like, that doesn't make any sense though. Like, she was the one saying it. And I'm like, yeah. And you know, Jen actually and I had a conversation about it too. And I was like, yeah, that's why there are times that Emma, my one daughter, has screamed that at me and I don't say a word to her. Because in fits of anger, when I've lost my temper, I've said it. So it's like, I can't very well chastise you for using the word, because that's right. Nothing but authoritarian. And that's do as I say, not as I do. And, you know, the one thing that I promised my kids when they were born and they spent the first month of their life in the NICU, when I used to go see them every day, like I only got to see them once a day pretty much for the first month of their life. And there's a couple of days I think I missed them there too. So I didn't get to spend a lot of time with them for the first month of their life. But every time I went to visit them, the one thing I made sure to tell them, you know, even though obviously they couldn't understand me, they're in these little incubators or whatever, but I would tell them, the one thing daddy is never going to do is daddy's never going to lie to you. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to tell you how it is. Whether other people like it or not, I don't care. I'm not going to lie to you. I can't do it.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important, because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
And, you know, that, so I've always tried to, like, that's always in the back of my mind when things come up. Like, you know, I've gotten adept at avoiding certain conversations with them without actually having to lie. So I've stretched that a little bit. Certain things that I may not think they're ready for, or I don't want to actually deal with talking to them about at this current juncture at 6 years old. But, you know, overall, I think I've stuck to that as best I could, you know. And I think that goes a long way too. And that's what we were talking about before, about parents, you know, the helicopter parents. That's what they're doing. They're lying to their kids about how the world works. They're lying to their kids about what they really want, because they're telling them they want one thing, but they're showing them a horrible method of getting there. You know, the ends don't justify the means.
It's demonstrating they don't have the intellectual skills. They haven't made the plans and put them into action. They don't have the emotional skills when you're yelling at a child who just told you to shut up. That shows that you don't have emotional skills. You're yelling at your own child. They're way smaller, you know. So literally loud sounds coming from the big person that you both love and fear is a big contradiction. You're yelling, now they're afraid. Before they were loving you. You know, so that's, you're setting up all these contradictions and things like that. You're setting it up so that you can create future strippers of the world, basically. You know? And it's like, oh God, now I feel filled with daddy's acceptance finally.
Oh man.
So there we go. There was an image for you, but radio friendly though, you know, so it's just, This is the world that's set up, and this is the contradiction button that I want to push with the show. It's just, okay, if you were inconsistent in this way to your children ever, you have a chance, not to avoid listening, not to avoid thinking about it, but just to literally do the one thing that actually provides justice in the world is offer restitution. You know, what did you break, and how can you help create the repair situation? And when it comes to breaking trust with a child because you yelled, you can, you know, build trust by demonstrating years of never yelling again. You know, you can begin to demonstrate trust and build trust like that. If you were ever violent towards your child, you can demonstrate trust by never being violent again to them, because again, it's like that whole, it's kind of like things I've learned from studying martial arts or just philosophy in general. Using superior physical force against someone who's so small and dependent on you, it seems so incredibly distasteful, you know. And that just even being threatening with it is distasteful. That's just really gross to me. For anyone who's in the power position, you know, like multiple times, it would be up there with like if there were giants on this earth and they happen to also be bullies, you know, like that. And like, oh, Jeremy, you're just really not good on the radio, so I'm just going to put you in a timeout. And they literally pick you up and put you over in a box or something, you know.
Yeah,
it's of that nature. And that, of course, is the statist world around us with those who actually have superior firepower kind of thing, the cockroaches, that kind of situation. So it's just like it is an opportunity in really assessing parenting. Is there going to be a real restitution for any damage that was done? And so maybe you're out there with a parent who's not going to listen to you because they're going to take all this stuff as critical of their parenting because they don't have the emotional skills to actually, and not to mention the humility and the curiosity and where you're coming from. They just want, you know, like maybe your mom, Jeremy, she just wanted to hear that she did a good job because she followed the recipe she was given and that was supposed to work. And to acknowledge that she was given a really crappy recipe is just not in her skill set, because that's to acknowledge decades of failure and stupidity, which is, you know, I guess if you don't have humility, that's called humiliation, you know. So that's my opinion on that. And I think you're in good hands with like a lot of people who will not talk to their mom or a parent or both parents, because I guess you're going to do the cost benefit analysis, right? Like, who do you want to spend your unpaid time with? Who do you want to, you know, communicate with on the regular? Probably people who have the qualities that you want, right? Yeah. I mean, unless you're a little masochistic, you know.
Yeah, or you're just a slave to tradition or a sense of obligation. Because I know plenty of people who would continue to go through because they fall into that. Well, it's the family, especially. I mean, with a mom especially, but like a lot of other close, you know, either immediate or just outside of the immediate family. You know, there's always that sense of well, I have to. You know, they're it's like. Well, I don't play by those rules. I haven't for a very long time. I never bought the whole blood is thicker than water routine. I have had my chosen family for a very long time. It's shifted over the years. I've jumped from a couple of different families because things went horribly wrong in some of them. But I was still making the choice, and I at least got out before the damage was too great. You know, and now
you mean like Stefan Molyneux?
I wasn't even thinking about that. Yeah, but that's another error in my life I may want to forget at some point. Now I use it as a learning tool. At some point, I may look back and go, "Oh, what was I thinking?" But yeah, man, you got, you know, it's I understand why people do it, and for the same, I think it's for the same reasons that people do like this parenting thing that we're talking about. You know, like you mentioned it, like with especially like somebody like my mom, this was the model I was given, and she strayed from the model she was given. Although, you know, my grandmother was my nana was definitely a one in a million type of person, because she ended up raising six kids almost on her own, because my grandfather died right before the last one was born. Like, she was already pregnant, and he died, like, I think a couple months before my uncle was born. So, you know, she was an incredible lady who did much more than, you know, dozens of other women I know put together as far as actually trying to put forth an effort with her kids and do everything she possibly could to make sure they turned out the best they possibly could, you know, that type of thing. You know, so it wasn't necessarily the model in her sense. I think with her, it also had to do with her being a public school teacher and being brought up in that, you know, being taught that environment and bringing that home, because she did, especially once my parents split, my mom became much more like Mrs. Hengler at home than mom. She became, wow. She like her teaching personality bled over into dealing with me, myself and my sisters. You know, because she just like the way she would talk to us certain times, the way she would word a lot of things. And I picked up on it, too. That was one of the things I did pick up on at a kind of early age. And I would throw it back at her when we got into fights. And of course, it just went over her head then. She didn't want to acknowledge it. But I really think that had a lot to do with it, too, because she just, you know, spent so many years in that environment that it rubbed off on her, you know.
Well, wait, did you get a double whammy? Did you get religious parents?
Thankfully, not really. I mean, I was forced into Catholicism up until I was 15 because my mom was kind of like she was religious, but it was my grandmother who was the super Catholic.
Oh, okay. You know, she was like religious to please her mom, kind of religious.
Well, no, I think she actually believes in it. She still does. You know, I think, but she wasn't like fundamentalist type religious, but she did force us to go. Like, we had to go to church and Sunday school until I was given the choice at 15 when I had my confirmation. I was told that if I just got, because I had complained since I was like 10 about having to go. And I was told that if as long as I got through confirmation, I was allowed to make a choice at that point whether I wanted to keep coming back or not. And she kept saying the whole time, but I know you're going to make the right choice, you know, basically trying to guilt me into it from the start. And of course, I never did. As soon as my confirmation was over and I had my little party and I got my gifts and my money, I'm like, all right, peace out. I didn't step back in a church for years. That did get pushed on me to a certain extent. But the education, because both my parents were public school teachers.
Huh. This is so weird. Okay, just my mom, public school teacher, like all the way. Like, I mean, all the way from out of college to retirement, you know.
Yeah, my mom too, basically, except for that one blip where she did her own thing. But other than that, yeah.
But except for one darn thing there, that major thing right there was my mom taught art, the fine arts, you know, talking, you know, drawing, painting, ceramics, and photography in high school. You know, like that, just in high school. That's it.
Okay.
And so, though that can be done in an authoritarian, because I said so kind of way, and you're going to follow the rules, that still does leave a lot of interpretation. Like, here are the materials and get going, you know, kind of thing is the end result of those kinds of things, you know.
Sure.
But no, please do it like this. Like, you'll get better results if you want to get results like this, you know, whatever the art form is. But yeah, you got really the double whammy. No, I had two atheist parents, Jeremy, so I didn't have that kind of message going into me.
But
it was something, you know. And there was even a political apathy that was also like, yeah, it's candidates, the running things. I don't know. Some people make a big deal about it. And religion, this was, I think, the word, the message I got from my folks, both of them, when, because they stayed together through my whole childhood, even though they would have been way better off separating during my childhood, like much happier. But they stayed together through,
for the kids,
you know. Yeah, for the in this case, for the Daryl.
Do it for the Daryl. There's our show title.
Yes. But think about the Daryl. You know, kind of the children, but just the Daryl. And they stayed together. Their message on religion was, there's a lot of people that they really take this stuff very seriously. They're probably wrong, but maybe, I don't know, don't make such a big deal about it. they will. You know, they'll make a big deal about it. And this is the comparison I wanted to make, so I wrote the notes down while you were talking. Just the comparison between public school teachers, so, you know, which are essentially teaching in what we call government schools, but they're public school teachers, and Jehovah's Witnesses. And the connection I had between them, both of these groups hate when you bring up where their specific religion comes from or where their specific discipline comes from. They hate looking into the origins of things. Like, they would really, really hate looking into the origin of the Prussian school education and going, you know, like, all the way back to where they got things from Sparta and, like, the caste systems in India, you know. You know, we're talking about traumatic condition training. That was exactly what the purpose was, to have, like, a very obedient, compliant, conforming.
Docile.
And also extremely self-reflectively apathetic, philosophically apathetic. Which, you know, nowadays even goes all the way, you know, look at the majority of actual situations on colleges today, which is just like the, you know, and in high schools would be politically apathetic. You know, there's some loudmouths who in high schools and colleges who have a big, loud political opinion. The vast majority of them, from everyone I've ever talked to in these places over these last decades, seems really just to not care. They just really just don't care. They just see it as like a big waste of time in those venues, you know. That's my impression. You think I'm off on that?
No, I actually do think you're right. And it's funny, I heard somebody else talking about this recently. I can't remember where it was, on some podcast I was listening to, but I've added a bunch of new ones recently, so I'm not sure. But I think that is right. And whatever show I was listening to, they were talking about it, the fact that, you know, everybody thinks that there's all the, like, these campuses are covered by these crazy extreme people, that, you know, the ones out there that are screaming their opinions and getting involved in all this stuff, because that's what you see on the news. But the reality is, if you actually go around, most of them aren't like this. Certain campuses, yeah, they're a little louder than others, but for the most part, yeah, most of them have already had the life sucked out of them by this point. The years of, you know, the 15,000 hours where we started this conversation of the public schooling system, whether it's, you know, whether it's actual public school or, you know, quote unquote private school, but still has to follow the same regulations and everything and the same basic type of curriculum stuff. So it's not really that much different, folks. I hate to break it to you. You know, you have to go through all these things. And by the time you get out of it, most people are just so thrilled to be done with it that anything new is better, and they don't want to have to think about things because they've just been forced to try to think about, you know, memorizing all this junk for all that time. But yeah, they're already apathetic to the world, and that's just as good as the original purpose of the schooling system, which was to make them compliant and want to do these things off the bat. Apathy works just as well for the powers that be. You know, as long as the citizenry won't fight back, they don't really care what the actual cause of it is. You know, they're just like, all right, great.
And just to go back to that second lesson of schooling that I mentioned, you know, the first one was obedience, obviously, but the second one is conformity. And that conformity really does make it. I mean, if everyone else is being apathetic and finding it really just so uncool to do any type of philosophical exploration of what motivates yourself, what motivates other people, of what, like, actually is going on behind the scenes, of what is emotional literacy, what is intellectual literacy, what are the skills of both, you know, what are the what are the ways to be successful in this life, you know. If everyone else is being apathetic and you really get the girl or the guy or the lead in the play or the student body president, whatever, treasurer kind of thing, if you get that reward from being basically a conformist, then you're going to go ahead and be a conformist because you're going to seek that pleasure tropic thing. And that's a new term I just discovered in a podcast I just listened to, conformity signaling. So you have all these children who are conformity signaling to each other in this state of captivity, right? In these government-funded, government-mandated public schools, which are not public, unlike Macy's, which is public, you can walk in, but you can't walk into a government public school, you know? So There's a lot of conformity signaling, and it goes all the way through. It goes all the way up to the parenting stage, right? And that was like, this is that topic where I get to ask the question, Jeremy, some of like biggest challenges as a parent, because you're like an active parent and I'm like a super duper distant parent of an adult. I'll just say right now, my biggest parenting struggles when my daughter was your daughter's age, ages. Yeah, it's a lot of apostrophes. It was the other parents. The other parents, because my daughter had friends, and those friends had parents, and those parents, I would have to spend a little bit of time in dropping off or picking up my daughter and talking with them, or, oh my God, a birthday party. Like, you know, a whole lot of awkward time spent. And, that was like a hazard. I don't know. Do you encounter that kind of situation?
Luckily, I don't have to deal with that much, because when they were younger, I was still working so much that unfortunately I missed a lot of those parties. Well, I guess fortunately for me, I missed a lot of those parties. You know, Jen would end up having to take them by herself because I had to be working. And then as they started to get older, then we started to have different issues with her family and then my family, not really getting along with them. And so the invitations started to become less and less for a lot of the parties that we usually had to deal with, because most of them were family related. And even the friend stuff, like Jen usually dealt with most of their play dates because I was always busy working. And nowadays the tide has shifted, unfortunately. Either their friends are on like horribly different schedules from us, so it's like almost impossible to ever work anything out, or some people have dropped off, unfortunately, because they either don't like me anymore, or they're mad at Jen because she's stuck by me despite everything that happened. But we're also trying to get the heck out of here, so we don't have to, I don't have to, yeah. I've never really had to deal with that aspect too much. For me, I guess the most difficult thing really is probably having to keep reteaching myself on a daily basis how to deal with my children and how to try to undo things that slip ups that I've made. Even though I found certain ideas like shortly after they were born, I was still learning all this stuff because I came from an environment that I grew up in that was like slightly authoritarian. I did get hit up until the point that I found peaceful parenting. I just assumed that I would spank my kids at some point if they got to a certain level. Like, that's just the mindset I had, the conditioning I had for all the time. Because I'm also,
at what age did you presume that it would be okay? Because obviously not like when they're like 3 months old and just out of the NICU.
Yeah, no. At the time I was thinking like older, like when they really, like, you know, I don't know, 3, 4, 5. I didn't really have an idea. Like, it was just the general idea I had in my head going into it. And up until the point they were one. And then I found all this stuff. And, you know, like I said, it was just between the conditioning I had at home and school, because I think I've talked about this on the air before too. Like, I was actually spanked. I was one of the last people spanked in school I was paddled before I think they finally banned it in the state of Pennsylvania. You know, that type of corporal punishment was quite accepted up until that point. And I was one of the last people that had it happen to me. So, you know, as much as I hated it happening, I just assumed that was the way. So, you know, having to constantly try to reassess myself. And also, we have struggles with our one daughter who has a bunch of issues. I mean, I've talked about it before. She was born with, cerebral palsy, and she has a lot of behavioral issues that are a lot of them were actually connected to it. Because of the condition she has, she's also prone to seizures. So there's a lot of stuff we have to juggle with that. And it's really trying to keep the peace with her and with my other daughter, who now has started to finally act out because she's tired of getting, as she sees it, her sister getting all the attention. Because when her sister loses control and we have to try to find modified ways of trying to talk her down off a ledge, essentially, you know, without just turning her over and spanking her like so many people would do, you know, it's... after a while, you know, kids, they see and learn, like you we said earlier, they pick up on these things. So these are the behaviors they're seeing modeled. Okay, my sister gets away with this and she gets all the attention. It does to a kid that age. I think they have an ability to reason more so than a lot of kids their age because of how we've brought them up. But they're still far from being able to understand complex ideas. You know, so there's still that instinctual level where it's, this is what my sister gets because she does this. So now I'm going to do this. So now her sister has started to mimic that behavior in order to try to get stuff. So trying to not like, I mean, I've admitted this before and I fully admit, we try to be peaceful parents the best we can. I have a temper. I yell more than anything. And that's always been my thing. I try not to, but there's points where I just lose it.
The audience, just, you don't know how often Jeremy's yelling at me behind the scenes.
Oh yeah,
you know, between these commercial breaks.
Yeah, if the full tape ever gets released, you know, you guys will understand. I'm much better than I used to be. That's how I always look at it. But yeah, so
it's okay.
So that also goes back to something I was mentioning earlier when I was saying that my one daughter especially calls me on my BS because I try to bring them up to see these things. And when I slip up and do that, she's like, wait a minute, you know, that's not what you tell me I'm not supposed to do that. How are you doing that type of thing? You know, like you're yelling, we're not supposed to be yelling, you know, why are we? Cause that's my question to them. When I walk in and she's already getting upset and, starting to lose control. And again, with the different conditions she's had, it's kind of hard to pinpoint if it's just purely a behavioral thing or it's also connected to all of her other stuff, which they think it is. So, you know, you can't really say you're doing this on purpose because a lot of it's not. It's like involuntary reactions she's having and, you know, trying to talk around it. But that's always my first question. Why are we yelling? So if I yell, you know, and if I hear back immediately, why are we yelling from either of them? I can't say anything.
Oh, those emotional skills, man, they'll get you if you don't keep working them, you know. And I don't know how I would do right now, Jeremy. I mean, if I, because I don't have the first, I don't have the first two resources, the time and the money to be a parent again. In an effective way. Now I have the emotional and intellectual skills, I think, but it's a real test because, you know, like a newborn and then like all the way through the whole toddler stage to where you are, like where they're getting food out of the fridge on their own and that kind of thing. Maybe still learning how to close them, but close the fridge, close the caps on the, you know, bottles or whatever. But still, like that. I mean, that's like an advanced stage right now, where like, you know, there's like rational. Well, you'll see it. Like everything is all extremely logical and rational. They're just looking for exactly understanding what those reasons are for everything. How does everything actually practically work? It's extremely rational. You know, it's extremely aiming for consistency is what I see children, unless of course they are around people who have broken logic and they're emulating that. Right. I don't know if you're. I don't know. I guess this is their mom. This is, I'm going to call Jen. Jen's their mom. Yeah. And, you might have like different versions of how far you've gone in your own personal studies of how consistent are you going to be with getting definitions, with knowing your logical fallacies and trying not to use them. And like, you know, being practical, you know, both with definition and with logic to get results that are what you wanted. That's what I mean by that's critical thinking in a nutshell. What I just said. And I don't know how far down that track I find this. Here's my story about too many women, especially too many moms. they don't have to do that. So therefore, they don't even try. Just like your mom as a public school teacher, she didn't have to study the history of public school and who came up with that version of it that she was indoctrinated into. A Jehovah's Witness doesn't have to study the history of where that specific discipline came from. They just do it, right? And I'm probably not too many witnesses listening right now, I would say. But, you know, probably not.
But if you are, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, but seriously, thank you. And if you are, I hope you take the time just to really research the origins of where your stuff came from, De Rothschild. And, you know, see, like, where exactly it's leading towards, you know, concentration camps. So, you know, just keep in mind. I mean, when I asked you, like, about some of the challenges, this is one that I thought that you might have endured, which is co-parenting. I split up with my daughter's mom when my daughter was less than four, three and a half or so. And in that time period between then and when she was, like, I guess about eight, I went through a series of girlfriends. And there was, you know, generally some that didn't last and some that, like, you know, lasted a long time. Like, did you ever have tension between, like, going the back and forth like that and maybe even boyfriends of the twins' mom?
Well, as things would work out for us, we actually had more problems when we were trying to parent still together. Which is a big part of what led to us separating, because while we were both largely in agreement with the peaceful parenting thing, our philosophies in general still were not jiving, because I was a full-blown anarchist at that point and she still did not grasp that. At that point, she still thought, as she told me later, I was going, like, she looked at it as I was just going through a phase. So it was not good then, and then after we first separated, it was really bad for a while. Once we agreed to start co-parenting, things were actually a lot better, and we actually were on board with everything. I never had to deal with the boyfriend thing, because I think she tried dating a time or two, but nothing ever came of it, and I was the one who actually ended up seeing somebody for a little while, and now that we're headed out of the, we're trying to leave this state. Things have already worked its way back to us being together again. So now I don't even have to worry about the co-parenting anymore.
Oh, back together with Jen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow, cool. Oh, yeah, I didn't even know that. It worked.
I announced that on the show a couple of weeks ago. That's right. I haven't talked to you in a while. yeah, that's right.
Whoa,
yeah.
Newsflash.
I kind of saw this happening after things petered out with the other girl I was seeing, which I've recently found out I was so much luckier than I realized at the time, because things got even more insane after I left, and somebody else got sucked into it instead. And I feel for the guy. I kind of had a feeling that there was a good chance of this, because we had agreed to continue to co-parent but also cohabitate in order for us to leave the state, because we knew we weren't going to be able to afford for both of us to have our own place once we left, and still have one of us stay home all the time. So we had agreed to cohabitate, and in order to do that, we started transitioning while we're still here. So she started moving her and the girls back in, like, months ago, slowly, like, they started staying here more and more, with her staying here too. And then eventually, like, she started staying here all the time too. And, you know, in close proximity, after you've had an 8+ year relationship at that point, where things have been rocky in certain respects, really bad in others, but in one certain respect, there was never anything wrong with it. Well, you know, that one thing will tend to rear itself up every once in a while. So,
well, that's a great way of saying stuff and beating around the bush at the same time.
Exactly. Things are actually really good between us, and we are working as close to a well-oiled machine as we can when it comes to the kids, as for the two of us. Because, I mean, now things are different. She's finally realized the error of her ways in a lot of respects, and she's actually now an anarchist. So it does make it easier to explain things to the kids, because now we are using the same language more. You know, you mentioned something about that before about, you know, the way you speak and how you define things and stuff like that. Well, yeah, you got to be consistent. That's a big deal. So it's a lot easier to do that now. And yeah, man, it's like I said, I managed to skip the horrors of co-parenting because I dealt with that while we were parenting.
Yeah, it's a great news flash. I mean, it now it's like you inspire me to fill up my page of questions. This is the one, man. It's about child-directed learning or unschooling.
Hold on, don't come up with too many because we are running short up on time. I'm looking at the clock. We've probably got about 3 minutes left. So
we got 3 minutes left.
Well, wow. I mean, we can keep talking. We can keep talking after this. I'll keep recording. But
no, it's just a simple question. If you broached the topic with Jen about unschooling or child-directed learning.
Yeah, you know? we are doing that. That was the one thing from the beginning we had agreed on, even before they were born. That
wow,
and even before she was an anarchist, that because she has worked in the education field for a while. She's, you know, quite a while, over a decade at this point. She, or more than a decade and a half, I guess. She's you know, she's worked with kids with special needs, specifically kids on the autism spectrum, and so she has an idea of how the government version of school works, and was always like, this is horrible. I don't want it to. And she went to Catholic school, so she thinks it's a, you know, she sees it as a little bit different, but she still understands. So we were in agreement about that from the beginning, that we were at least going to homeschool. And then once I found Dana Martin and unschooling, I presented that idea to her, and it took a little while to sell her on that, but that's kind of the route we've been going for the past 3 years now. We kind of started when they were three. We kind of started putting different stuff out there and seeing which way they ran with it, and, you know, letting them make their choices on what they want to do, what they want to learn, what, you know, what they want to talk about, and then just trying to incorporate some type of lesson into it so they can learn something along the way type of deal. So yeah, I love it.
Awesome.
I'm a huge proponent of unschooling, and I talk about it a lot, and like I said, we are running short of time. We never actually got to the article that actually
the
sparked
article.
This conversation. I wrote a piece. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show yet or not, but I wrote a piece that I've been working on for over almost two years at this point. Longer. I started writing pieces of it in my head back in 2015, and I kept talking about it on different Seeds of Liberty episodes that I was going to write this piece about parenting, and I was going to write this piece about parenting and contradictions, you know, because you mentioned it earlier, the whole contradiction thing. And it wasn't until earlier this year, like a month or so ago, that I finally was like, I need to finish this. Because I had actually put like 3 or 4 paragraphs on paper, and I was like, or, you know, on the computer screen. And I'm like, I got to do this. So I finally put it out there. And it got a lot of good feedback. Some good feedback. Other people just kind of liked it and passed it on. I'm like, really? I was looking for feedback too. But that's kind of what sparked this whole conversation with Daryl and I, because he said, when we said we're going to record, he's like, oh, we could talk about parenting. But I will stick that in the show notes for anybody who hasn't read it and would like to. Because now,
and also, you're listening out there, and you don't, you know, maybe you're not even going to get a chance to go to show notes because you're just one of those old timey radio people. But you do have a computer. You're not like in the 1900s, you know. I mean, I'm sorry, the 1800s. So you can just put into your search engine, steam it. Contradictions abound. If you know how to spell those English words, yeah. Steam it is STEMIT.
Yes.
Contradictions abound, and you'll find it. You know, that's how I just popped it open there. It's actually well written because you understand marketing and sales and how to actually reach the people. And you know, I'm learning how to do that kind of thing. But I think it covers a lot of important topics of parenting. And what we covered in the show today, that's really something I'm going to advise every single parent to go back and entertain yourself with, or infotain yourself with. But seriously, maybe you can apply yourself to some of this and go check this Steemit article out. Upvote it. Get him some serious Steemit love over there.
Well, it can't get any money anymore. It's already paid out. But we do got to run. Time's almost out. This has been great, Daryl. Thank you very much for joining me tonight and having this conversation. And everybody out there, more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Check next time.
Worms.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends-related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.